When I first came to this parish, one of the unusual features of Sunday worship I noticed, never encountered before, I might add, was the custom of praying for animals and the animal kingdom during the intercessions at the 10:30 a.m. service. At first, I wondered if this was because I was in a parish with an exceptional number of pet lovers. After all, my predecessor had had a great devotion to Claude, his Siamese cat. But then I thought that maybe the parish was very advanced in its theology because a friend of mine had just published a book on the ethics of animal pain. In short, whether we can justify to God what we do to animals in order to eat, clothe ourselves, and enjoy ourselves while out hunting. In other words, human beings, often without thinking about it, bring suffering to the animal kingdom in order to support their comfort. Those with a sensitive conscience will be aware that this is something that Christians could think about carefully and prayerfully. Of course, the Bible is full of animals, and the nativity stories have no shortage of them either. Sheep with the shepherds, camels with the wise men, cattle with the Holy Family, and since Father Christmas made his way into the Christmas story as Christianity advanced into the northern European world, we also have reindeers. Today, I want to concentrate on just one of those companions to the Christmas story, lambs. Here, let me admit to the fact that lambs have a certain personal resonance for me because the symbol of my theological college was the lamb and flag. It sounds like the name of an English pub, I know. I've always wanted to own one of the college sweatshirts because it's got an emblem of the lamb and flag on the upper arm. I would be amused by the curiosity and comments it would draw from those who are trying to figure out what it meant in relation to me. It is in fact a vivid pictorial symbol in which the lamb trots forward with the flag of resurrection victory tucked under one of its front hooves. It is an image not just of victory but also of sacrifice. This image sums up what the Bible talks about as the lamb slain from before the foundation of the world. Lambs, as Christmas chefs can tell you, often die to benefit human beings. No doubt there'll be a few lambs on Christmas tables today, but there is a wider significance to these innocent little creatures. We think of them as being passive and easy to scare, but that's not the way they operate in the Christian story. The lamb and the flag image is all about the truth that Jesus came into the world not to run away from trouble, but to face it head on and to do something decisive about suffering, evil, and human separation from God by following on in the path of sacrifice. But rather than being drawn into the Easter story now, I want to point out the symbolism of all this as it relates to us in Christmas. I want to ask you now to remember how and when your Christian walk began. It'll be a different story for every one of us, for the Holy Spirit has 1,001 different ways of reaching out to and connecting with each person. But if we took the time and trouble to hear each person's story about their beginning time as a Christian, the chances are that most of these accounts would have a similar approach and style. It'd be a tale of what they did. It'd be a description of the initiative they took to draw near to God. Often, vivid Christian testimonies of sudden conversion experiences take the same tack. They're stories of a choice, of a decision that's changed a life. Look what I did is the byline. But is this in fact the way things happen, particularly when it comes to God's habitual approach to creating a relationship with human beings? Does he just wait for us to take a step toward him? Was it really a story of our heroic choice and dramatic decision? Just suppose it was the other way round. In fact, if we pay close attention to the Christmas story, we can notice a different rhythm and momentum going on. The angel Gabriel comes to Zechariah to tell him that he is about to become the biological father of John the Baptist. A similar scene plays out when Gabriel tells Mary that an even more dramatic change is about to take place in her life, as the Holy Spirit makes things happen in her womb in a way that the human race has never known before. Joseph is told in a dream to stick with his fiancée, even though he risks social shame and disgrace in the process. Some scholar priests from over the eastern frontier of the Roman Empire start out on a journey of many, many miles, drawn by a star that has irresistibly compelled their attention. Shepherds come in from the fields, acting under instructions from a heavenly choir, to locate a very holy event in a very homely setting. The only heroic decision that was made here was by Mary, and even then God was calling the shots and setting the agenda. In every case, the flow of initiatives and the direction of the story stems from the Godward side of the narrative. Even Herod is reacting to events that are outside his control. This is a drama in which the scriptwriter and the director is God. The actors may add a certain individual particularity to the roles, but in the end, they are marching to the beat of someone else's drum. The truth is that salvation is about what God did for us a long time ago. It's not about what we do for God. He chose us long before we chose him. Everything necessary for our salvation has been done by God. When we eventually tune into him, we are responding to a symphony that started playing long before we ever heard it. Jesus is the Lamb who at the incarnation left the sheep pen of his Father's pasture to come looking for us. He isn't sitting around waiting for us to make the first move. He's on the move towards us. He'll search us out wherever we are, because he wants to share his gentle and warmly loving and peaceful presence with us. This isn't a lamb who runs away at the first hint of danger, who gets lost on windy, rainy hillsides, or who slinks away at rejection. Sure, there's vulnerability about him. He's come in this to us in this way because it's the most likely form to draw and invite our response. Maybe he's got the whole wide world in his hands, but he won't use his power to boss us into believing in him. This is the thing about some kind of animals. They have a way about them that have a remarkable effect on human beings. I remember once watching as a big husky was brought into a bar. He proceeded to lie on the floor and look very much at home in this public place. The remarkable thing that followed wasn't just the way the barmaid felt compelled to kneel down beside him, to pat him and to say tender things to him. It was the way the atmosphere there changed. Suddenly people started behaving in better, kinder, gentler ways. Whatever huskies have, Jesus has too. And this Christmas, he's on his way to our place. He has come looking for us. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.